Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, everybody. This is the Deceptively Fast Podcast. I'm trying real hard to do a lot of things different than what I do on radio when I come to podcasts, because that's supposed to be the freedom of this format. But I'm going to be honest with you. I'm a little bit fish out of water with this right now because I'm used to having my companion, Mike Meltzer, not my gay companion, just my work companion, Mike Meltzer, with me all the time. So before I start, my gay companion is a whole nother story. Before we start, I'm going to introduce you to Garrett the Web Guy. Garrett,
hey,
what's up?
Garrett, how's it
going? From our normal job at Sports Radio 610, Garrett's the guy that comes in every now and then and weighs in on like comic book stuff, soccer, kicking, and other things. So he's here to make me feel comfortable. He's like my little blankie and in
your
form.
Linus world.
I'll carry you around. Like, that's what I said Sean White when he was carrying the American flag off after he won the gold. It looked like he was carrying his blankie.
Yeah.
And people got upset about that. You're going to be my guy to be my emotional blanket right now. But basically, I wanted to have something that I could use to talk about all the things that I don't get to talk about on Mad Radio, on Sports Radio 610, because for one, it's a sports show, so we can't talk a lot about this stuff. And then two, there are a lot of sports stories that, for whatever reason, just aren't good on radio because they're not relevant to Houston, or it's just a little bit too nerdy, or whatever it might be. So a lot of times we'll do a whole bunch of show prep before the show, and we'll have all these various topics. And then you get to the end of the show, and you're like, oh, man, I really wish we had talked about that.
You don't have a lot of time sometimes, too. Like,
we only have 4 hours.
Yeah, that's it. But it's funny. You only have 4 hours, but, you know, to keep people's relevance, because they're so worried about the time people listen.
Yeah.
To keep people's relevance, sometimes you can't really break into a topic for 20 minutes.
Right.
And if you want to, and you can do that here.
Yeah, they only talk. People listen for like 15 to, if somebody listens for 45 minutes or studs, they're listening the whole way in. So you got to keep hitting those A topics and those B topics all throughout the day. And then sometimes you get to the end of the day, and like when my co-host isn't even watching the Olympics, he doesn't want to talk about the Olympics. I know he's un-American. And I feel like sometimes he's sensitive about the fact that he was actually born in Russia. So I don't pick on him.
And doesn't have a flag at this Olympics.
Yeah, but his dad. Oh, that's right. He's got the OAR. The athletes competing as Russians.
Olympic athletes of Russia.
I think as of the time of this recording of this podcast, I think the Olympians from Russia, or however, what are they being called?
Olympians from Russia. Olympic athletes from Russia.
I think we're ahead of them by one medal, or they're ahead of us by one medal.
Curling scandal.
That's right, the curling scandal, the dude who is juicing to curl. Yeah. And a lot of people are like, listen, everybody's saying, oh, why would you juice to curl? And I think the answer is pretty obvious. It's like to gain a small edge.
Yeah.
Like any of these things. Like everybody out there can do whatever they're doing without steroids, but they're trying to find that one little edge. So with curling, where I think some people don't give enough respect to the physical fitness of these curlers, they're all in astoundingly good shape. Yeah. The guy, this Melodium, what is it?
Yeah, I don't know his name.
Whatever Melodium. No, that's the name of the drug.
Oh, I'm like, I don't know. It sounds like his name.
Whatever the drug is, it's apparently, I've never heard of it, but apparently they do prescribe it for things, but he feels like he was going to get an edge, allegedly. But anyway, so this is the kind of stuff that doesn't necessarily come up on the show. I'm going to try real hard not to yell. This is my promise to everybody listening. This show is going to suck for a good like 2 to 3 weeks at least, and I'd really, really, really like it to suck pretty bad at times, because I want to experiment and I want to get your feedback. I'm going to have a subreddit on this at some point. I just have to set it up. So I would encourage everybody to tweet at me, Facebook me, go at the subreddit and everything, and we'll get a lot of feedback. But really, Garrett, I've been talking to you for a long time about how exactly am I going to do this podcast, and I've been kind of going back and forth as, okay, do I want a co-host? Do I want to have a rotating schedule of co-hosts? Do I want to do just interviews? And then after I saw Black Panther on Friday, which I'm going to get to in a little bit, I started reading about Black Panther, and then I started reading about Marvel Comics. and how when Marvel Comics first got into the movie business, it was when they were coming out of bankruptcy and they're trying to scrap together some cash as best they can. So they approached Sony, who had the rights for Spider-Man at the time, and they said, hey, listen, what do you say we just bundle up all the movie rights to all these superheroes and we give them to you? And I think it was for like less than $20 million.
Yeah, it wasn't much.
It wasn't a lot of money at all. And Sony balked at it. So then what Marvel said was, hey, this is what we'll do. We're going to make our own movies, and we don't really expect to make a bunch of money on it, but it'll be a great way to sell action figures. So they got these, they got a focus group together, all these kids, and had them play with action figures and figured out, okay, which action figure is best. And it turned out that Iron Man was the one that the kids wanted the most. So they made Iron Man, and they cut a bunch of corners. They got John Favreau to direct it because he was kind of like, eh.
And he's a little bit of a comic book nerd. Right, he knows the story well.
But he's not like a big name producer, director, whatever.
Yeah, he's not J.J. Abrams.
Spielberg in it. Yeah. And then they got Robert Downey to be the lead because, hey, he's good, but who knows if he's even going to stay sober. So whatever the hell. We'll slap this thing together and we'll sell some action figures.
Right. People don't realize that before Iron Man, Robert Downey Jr. really wasn't. Like, he wasn't huge anymore.
He'd been a guy that had, like, all kinds of issues, and then he'd rehabilitated himself, but he wasn't a big deal.
Yeah.
And then he does this, and then obviously everything blows up. But, like, this violates the rules of, like, anytime anybody writes a book about wanting it or going for it or gotta have the passion, like, Marvel did the exact wrong thing in terms of all of that.
They just threw it to the wind.
They half-assed it. They were just trying to figure out a way to sell more action figures, and they are selling a lot more action figures now. That part of it was successful, but they also, in spite of themselves, ended up with this huge franchise. So I'm sitting here and I'm like, all right, I gotta quit overthinking this and at least just throw something out, me talking into a microphone for a little while, and then we'll figure out and build on from there and see what happens. No offense to you, Gary.
That's fine. No, it's fine.
Like, I don't need to be paying some Sean Pendergast to come in here to be my co-host.
Well, you said we've talked about this for a while. It's probably gone through four or five iterations of what you wanted this podcast to be. And this, I actually, is what I was hoping for all along.
Yeah.
Like, I want to just hear you speaking about stuff. You're a smart guy. You're entertaining to listen to.
But I get, this is what happens sometimes, and this is why it's good that I'm paired with Mike Meltzer. And that's the other thing, everybody. I got to try to make this more of a national focus, so I'll explain who Mike Meltzer is to a lot of people as we get further on down the road. Right now, the only people listening know who I am. But Mike Meltzer is like the opposite of me, and he keeps me on track. And when I start to kind of really go off the rails, he reins me back in, and I have a tendency to go a little too fast sometimes. So I'm gonna try like hell to slow the hell down. But as we get into this, there is also this thing, it's called the Hawthorne effect, and I've talked about this before, which is this phenomenon where when people know they're being studied, all of a sudden they produce a lot more. And for how I'm going to utilize that effect with this podcast is that for my listeners that know that I'm paying attention to how they're listening, it's all part of the experiment. And I'm gonna kind of mold and craft this thing. I don't know how much I'm gonna talk about sports. I think at least part of the problem is like I haven't monetized this thing, and I don't plan on monetizing it for like at least successfully for a long time. There is one little bit they were experimenting with that I'll tell you about later, but I don't want to step on my employer's toes.
Yeah, but
all.
And it's always gonna be free. This is always gonna be a free podcast. Yeah. There might be money in it to be made.
The only thing,
but
this is what I'm gonna do for money for in the beginning, because I like experimenting with this stuff. On my website, deceptivelyfast.com, mm-hmm. I've got like Amazon links.
Yeah.
So sometimes, like, I'm gonna talk about this book today, The Butchering Art, for a little bit. So if you go to the website, deceptivelyfast.com, I'll have a little link there where if you click on it and you bought the book, then I would get like a dollar off of that or something.
Ooh.
So yeah, that's right. Hey, it adds up fast. I could be making money to the tune of dozens of dollars here per week.
If
people buy enough. If there's one thing I know about young people today, it's they love paper books. They're gonna be lined up basically waiting for Apple phones for these paper books.
Don't underestimate the hipster's ability to be old and buy paper books.
And because you also, and this, you know this, Garrett, I advocate the paper paper. I read the paper newspaper because I don't. There's nothing to click on, so I can read a whole article and then I move on to the next article
and don't get distracted.
Right.
I hate when I'm halfway through and I'm like, "Ooh, what's this?"
Ooh. Well, I have to read this wiki,
and then I'm 7 pages deep before I get back to the original article.
So. To that effect, I'm going to utilize the Hawthorne effect. And I honestly, I don't even know how big I want my audience to be for this. I don't want to piss people off, and I don't want to drive people away. But it might not necessarily be a lot of the people that are going to come to this initially are people that listen to my sports show. I don't know how much of a sports show this is going to be, but we'll see. So along those lines, I did see Black Panther. And one of the reasons I wanted you in here today, Garrett, was to just to shut me up if I say anything wrong.
Okay. But, I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, you haven't? Okay.
No.
Do you read the comics?
I have 3 children. I don't go to see movies.
Yeah, because of these kids, except they're a little too young for Black Panther. Probably.
No, my son and daughter are both 9 and 7, and we will take them to see it. Uh-huh. But also just with 3 kids doing it on opening weekend when it's packed is just terrible. Well, I want room.
You know what's nice now? Is that they have all these movie theaters. I don't know about elsewhere, but in Houston, there's really starting to be this proliferation of dine-in movie theaters.
Oh, yeah. They're the greatest.
Which you get reserved seating.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part, I'm lucky because I don't have a conventional job, so I can go see a movie at 11 a.m. or 1 p.m. You can't. So,
exactly.
But if you go along, if you go in advance a little bit, you don't have to deal with a whole lot of the extra stuff. But there are a couple things I noticed, and I am a non-comic book nerd, and I'm not going to spend too long on this, but there are a couple things, and one was this. The villain, Eric Killmonger, is immediately like one of my favorite villains ever, and I don't want to have any spoiler alerts here or anything, but they did a really, really good job of creating this villain that's kind of likable in a way, and you're like, I don't know if I like want to like this guy, but should I feel guilty about liking this guy? But he's really cool. Like he's the coolest guy in the whole film. And but he's also I'm thinking of what's the name of the actor that is? Is it Michael
B. Jordan?
Yes, Michael B. Jordan.
Yeah, he's the
He's typically like kind of like a lovable baby face dude.
Yeah,
but he got all yoked up. He got huge for this. Like you're seeing it, I'm like, I think I know that guy. I'm gonna have to look this up after the film because he looks he's absolutely yoked in it and like lean. Now it's not like he got like fat to do it or anything.
Well, he was
like
also he was
up
Creed.
To be a D-lineman.
He was in Creed.
Yeah, that's right. But I think he's even bigger than he was in Creed.
Yeah, he looks
Creed,
a little bit bigger, for sure.
I'll tell you what. I'm not gay, but I might be gay. He's a freaking stud in this thing.
His smile
I'm not gay for him. But honestly, they had a no smile rule for him.
Oh,
because
in the movie?
He's got like a nice smile and everything. When you smile, he's like, oh, that's the guy I want to date my daughter.
Yeah.
But like, no, this guy's supposed to be.
Oh, so
evil
he doesn't
incarnate.
Smile the whole movie?
I don't know. No,
spoiler
no. Like, not even
he doesn't
evil.
Smile.
Not even like an evil smile or anything.
Oh, wow. Okay. He's really good.
He's really good. Shuri, who is the sister of the king, he's really good as well. The one thing that I've seen complaints about and that I understand, even though I'm not a comic book nerd, is that the CGI isn't all that great. There's like some issues, like where there's a scene where they're riding these rhinoceri, and it looks kind of like, that's a video game where guys ride rhinoceri.
Yeah, you know, it was a concern going into the movie that this is a heavy, there's not a lot of practical effects you can do with this because it's a country that's completely made up with a bunch of tech that's completely made up.
So, like, so what do you mean?
Practical effects means, like, you can, like, Star Wars does practical effects where they build the X-Wing.
Uh-huh.
So you're actually seeing an X-Wing.
Yeah.
Flying, but they just do the background.
They do
so
the
it's
background,
the easier
everything's
part.
All CGI.
Yeah.
Where this is, like, everything needs
is
to be CGI.
Because it's so elaborate and so.
So then it looks like a cartoon.
Yes.
Right, because they're built on, and this is where, I don't get the comic book stuff a lot of times, and I've only gotten into it recently because my daughter is into it, which is cool, because now I'm, like, learning the X-Men, and I'm learning Marvel and everything. And the whole thing about, or excuse me, I'm learning the Avengers. They're both Marvel. And that's the thing that I've been really impressed with, is that with the Marvel stuff, how funny it is. It's not just cheesy, corny like comic book humor, like what I would think of as comic book humor. Like these are legitimately funny characters.
It's funny when they actually have people get mad that they're funny.
Oh really?
Oh yeah,
because they want to be
serious. They want it to be like, and
they want
I
to
always
be like Star Wars where it's corny, stupid, awful humor.
And I always say it's a comic book, guys. Yeah. There's always been humor in comic books.
Uh-huh.
Always. Every comic book movie has had humor until Dark Knight, but people loved, like, the Dark Knight series was that first series of, like, dark, we're not going to be funny. And DC's trying to go that way and have everything be that dark realism.
Yeah.
And where the comic books, there were a little more, there were some dark comics with Batman.
Is everybody just afraid that it's going to go back to, like, the campy days of, like, the Batman TV show? Yeah, is there a little fear that somehow it's all going to be...
like, pat, zap, zow!
But that stuff then, when you go back and watch that stuff, though, too, then you realize that, oh, wait a second, that was done, like, intentionally campy, and it was actually... That was way more sophisticated humor than I thought it was.
Yeah.
Like you go through the stage where you're a kid and you don't know any better. Mm-hmm. You're watching like Adam West reruns. And then you get to the point where you're like, oh, wow, that's really cheesy. And then you get to the point where you're like, oh, wait, oh, yeah, that was intentionally cheesy.
Yeah. They were
poking fun at a lot of stuff.
Yeah. So I think the jokes and even a little bit of the campiness, which they get into a lot, I think Captain America has some very campy parts.
Yeah.
Thor is great with it. But they do them really well, and they fit, and it's okay because I think also it brings the human element to all these characters that are so inhuman.
So this is basically, all right, okay, so that was one thing that happened this weekend. I went to see Black Panther. I saw it on Friday or Saturday, like I said, because I went to one of these movie theater dine-in places that wasn't that actually bad, and I accidentally, this is the other thing I stumbled onto. I feel like it's a little bit of conspicuous consumption. But like you don't have to be a millionaire to do this. It was, my daughter was going to bring a friend, but her friend couldn't come. So then the great thing about these places is that you could just buy an extra seat and you got nobody next to you.
Yeah.
So you're just, completely, I don't have to deal with some weirdo next to you.
A lot of them, if you don't go in prime hours, like my wife and I, we tend to try to go to the sit down places on like weeknights. And it's like $5 a ticket.
Oh, yeah.
It's super cheap for the ticket, and then you buy the food. It's great.
Do you feel guilty about not buying food, though, sometimes?
No.
You don't
sometimes
at all?
Sometimes we do.
I over-tip, I find, but because we always this poor kid, he's just dependent on tips for his living, and I got nothing for him.
Yeah, but we get, you know, we'll get a dessert to share and a drink each, and, you know, it's still 20. We're still spending 20, 25 bucks.
Okay, so here's the other thing that happened this weekend. The NBA All-Star Game, which typically a lot of people don't typically care about, but there were a couple different things going on here. Obviously, you had that LeBron and Steph had drafted their own teams, and oh my gosh, what's going to happen with whatever, who cares? The biggest thing that everybody won't shut up about today, and I'm not on air, so I'll talk about this today, was Fergie's butchering. I want to say butchering of the national anthem, except this. This is the danger of social media and the internet today, is that by the time I actually got around to listening to the national anthem, I'd been set up like this was going to be the absolute most god-awful, ear-pounding thing we've ever seen or heard. When, if you compare it to like when people have isolated tracks on some singers and you find out that it's awful, or sometimes like the It's Saturday Night Live when Ashley Simpson's lip-syncing went awry and all that stuff, then that's what you're prepared for. Her voice sounded froggy at times, and you could tell that she was struggling. But I think the biggest thing, right, was that she was trying to pull it off like she was some kind of sexy lounge singer.
It was just a weird presentation.
It was, and this is where I'll defend her. I think a couple things were probably going on. One, I wonder if her voice was messed up, so she thought, all right, the way I'm going to get around this is by pulling off this sexy lounge singer thing. And I got to think that when she decided to go for the sexy lounge singer thing, regardless of why she chose to go for it, she knew there was a good chance that people wouldn't like it. So I'll give her credit because she sold it the whole time.
She committed.
She actually committed. And like you get to the end of that song and you feel like, wow, she really, I felt bad for her because she looked like she really thought she nailed it. People think I'm sexy.
I think the biggest thing, and I was the same way with you. I didn't see it until like it'd been built up as this terrible thing. The funniest thing for me was that at the end, I feel like she felt like it was a really loud applause.
Yeah.
It was like a big applause.
Okay.
And I feel like she thought it was like, Oh man, they loved it, and I felt
was it an ironic applause?
I felt like the entire audience was like, "Okay,
thank you for giving us that." Well, because I have to go back and watch the pregame show too, because I know people complained about the whole pregame show being like 35-40 minutes long. All that
I don't care. I typically check in
on All-Star games, and that's the extent of the analysis I give them, because I never. I'm not complaining about them. Enough people watch it. Like, as much as we complain about it every year, people keep watching it.
Yeah.
So, like, you can tweak it and make it better, but it's not going away as long as people are watching it.
Yeah. And, you know, we got curling and downhill skiing and all these other things I want to watch, so I'm not going to watch that crap. I'm serious. I would rather watch curling and downhill. I would rather watch biathlon.
This is the thing about the biathlon. Okay. I read an article about Sweden. No, mm-hmm. Norway, excuse me. I'm prejudiced, racist here. They all look alike to me over there. But the Norwegians are dominating the medal count, correct?
It's
still the Norwegians. And so I read this article about why they're doing so well in Norway. And these are the two things that they cited. One was the fact that they don't keep score until kids are 13 over there. And I know, like, people get all triggered about this when you talk about not keeping score in America.
Because
all
of a sudden it turns
into why everything is awful, because nobody's keeping score and kids are too soft. I'm only going to say this, because I grew up as a kid that, like, wanted to win from the time I was 6 years old, and nobody had to teach me how to want to win. I was kind of a hard-o, annoying douchebag about it early on. Most kids don't enjoy sports as a way of actually winning until they're about 13 years old. Like, there have been a lot of studies done about this. So, like, and I don't get all holier than thou about this. If you're in a league where you keep score, that's fine. If you don't, who cares? Other than to say that it seems like Norway has a lot of people that keep competing in sports on through high school and up through their adult years, because they really foster the spirit of really enjoying sports and enjoying the camaraderie. Mm-hmm. When kids get to be 13, guys and girls, they start to really care about winning. Like, that's just natural.
Yeah.
And now the other thing, and this is where I'm not completely buying all this. I think a huge part of it is just that it's this financially successful country in where they all play a lot of winter sports and they have the money to commit to it for these technologically advanced sports. Where mm-hmm. I don't know how many. Norway might be the size of Detroit, but I would imagine that their number of biathletes is probably the absolute number of biathletes might be greater than the absolute number of biathletes in a country as big as America.
100%. And it's weird that they're so good at these sports that, you know, they have a decent soccer culture there. They're not very good at soccer. They have a decent culture for others. They could play other sports that are played internationally.
But they're really good at these
really
like,
good at
super
these really
exclusive
niche,
winter sports. The biathlon I'm into this year, and I don't know if it's NBC's coverage of it and just the way they're zooming in and presenting the targets and all of that. And I think the ice skating, they're presenting the scoring in a little bit different of a way to where I'm enjoying it more.
NBC's been doing a great job.
Yeah, they have. And you know what I think has helped too is drones.
Yes.
I think drones have helped because a lot of these sports with courses, it's like, all right, how much money are you going to commit to covering the biathlon course? But I'm guessing it seems like they've got some drone footage
right? It definitely seems like it's drone. I don't know if it is, but it seems like it.
So,
the way it
the
hovers
least,
and the
whatever
way
it
moves.
Is, they have enough have enough extra cameras so you can kind of keep track of everything.
Yeah.
Where in the past, sometimes it seemed kind of like, here's your two stationary cameras, and we'll figure out like what the hell's going on with a graphic or something.
Yeah, and we'll talk about the leader, but we don't have a shot of him for another 47 seconds.
I like watching this stuff too, because when I was a kid, I was big into endurance sports, like as a participant. I saved all my money up so I could buy a Cannondale racing bike. A cycle.
Oh, okay.
Because I was thinking in my head, I was going to be like in the Tour de France. Back then, Greg LeMond was the guy.
It was a big thing.
Yeah. He had survived this hunting accident and he came back and he won a Tour de France. Mm-hmm. And after he should have been dead, like he was the great pre Lance Armstrong story that people kind of forgot about. And he's been adamant that he's never doped or anything. And that was before everything really took off with the doping and cycling. But I was hook, line, and sinker in this. Yeah, yeah. 80s? It must have been the 80s. Because I can remember reading Greg LeMond's book, and one of his big messages in that book was that one of the things that really sets athletes apart is their capacity for suffering. Like, how much are you willing to suffer? and how stupid are you willing to look as you do it? Like, are you like willing to look
like throwing comically up on the side bad, of the road.
Like as yeah. in front of other people? Because that's what it's like when you're suffering. And like, I took that to heart, and I learned a lot from Greg LeMond. And then the other one too was cross country skiing. In the winter, I would cross country ski.
Really?
I would go off on my own because I was like, I lived in this neighborhood, or I'd go to my grandma's house after school, and by the time I used to have this really cool group
this
of
friends.
This
is in like northern New York?
This is in upstate New York. Yeah.
Like Rochester, right?
Victor, New York. Okay. So my grandma, I would go to my grandma's house after school. And when I was like 5, 6, 7 years old, I had this really great neighborhood with a bunch of kids my age and we'd have a good time. But then all of a sudden, by the time I was like 9 or 10, all these kids moved away. So I was stuck by myself every day when I came home from school. And somewhere along the way, somebody bought me some cross-country skis. So in the winter, I'd go out like cross-country skiing, and there was a golf course nearby. So I'd go on the golf course and everything. And then in the summers, I'd ride my bike. And then as I got to be a teenager, like when I'd wake up for work in the morning, I would during summer break, I would wake up, I would ride my bike like 10 miles to my grandpa's house to work on the farm. And then at like 3 o'clock, I'd ride from my grandpa's house like another 10 miles to football practice.
Oh my God.
Now I'd go to football practice or whichever summer camp I was doing. And then after that, I'd ride it 10 miles home, like in the twilight in summer, you know? So, and that was when I kind of got into like, all right, I'm going to need a better bike than this. So I got a fast bike. And that was when I was in 8th and 9th grade. But I really think like a lot of kind of what allowed me to play above and beyond what my natural physical ability was when I played was that I had better endurance than a lot of guys. And like DeAndre Hopkins will talk about this. DeAndre Hopkins runs 5 miles a day in the offseason, which isn't typical.
Doesn't do a lot of weight
for
stuff.
For fast twitch athletes, right. But that long endurance stuff, or relatively long, isn't typical for fast twitch athletes, but it kind of sets you apart when you have that ability to do all that.
And like for him, when you can do it in the fourth quarter. By the way, you're making me feel like it as an 8th, 9th grader, like the laziest son of a bitch
I've
ever.
That's the beauty of growing up on like in a farming family.
I lived in a small town, but not a very small town, and I just like I played a lot of video games. I mean, and I would rollerblade everywhere over my small town, but like, God, I thought if I was rollerblading to the McDonald's, it was far. It was like 3.5 miles.
That's the beauty of growing up on a farm. Like the downside, whole lot of accidental deaths, dismemberments, and whatnot. That's the downside. But if your child survives the farm, then they grow up and they're tough and all this stuff, and they've got good endurance and everything.
So we should send our kids, like 12, send them off to a farm and hope for the best.
Hopefully it's not like an alcoholic farmer because, again, dismemberment. Yeah. Oh, I got to get to this before we do this because I'm this is one of the things. Honestly, I want to satisfy my literary bent a little bit because I'm trying to read more, and I feel like if I have the pressure of talking about what I'm reading on a podcast, I'll actually read even more. This is what I'm reading right now, and our listeners on my radio show know this, but I'm halfway through this. It's called The Butchering Art. It's Joseph Lister's quest to transform the grisly world of Victorian medicine. So it's this book about Joseph Lister, who was basically the first guy in the mid-1800s in England that realized, oh, wait a second, disease doesn't come from bad air. It comes from actual microorganisms. And but there's these stories. I cannot tell you, Garrett, for the life of me, how scary a world it was. Like before penicillin especially, but even back then, like these people were going to surgery pretty much resigned to the fact that they were probably going to die.
You're either going to die at best, lose a limb.
You're going to lose a limb. Right. We're definitely going to cut your leg off. We're definitely going to do that. Like until the 1850s, they didn't use ether. So
my God.
So surgeons, one of the things that a surgeon had to be good at was just being fast at it. So there were some of these surgeons that were world renowned, or at least, I don't know, like London renowned, because they could cut off a leg in 30 seconds. So they would.
My God.
They would. Here, I wrote this down. So this is Liston, who is a predecessor of Lister. So this is a guy that's like one generation older than Lister. They said he could remove a leg in less than 30 seconds. And in order to keep both hands free, he often clasped the bloody knife between his teeth while working.
Oh,
so
my God.
These guys would come in, and there was, again, because until Lister came along, nobody had a clue about cleanliness and, like,
they're not sanitizing everything.
It sounds idiotic, but they had no clue that actual filth contributed to disease and everything.
My God.
So they would come in and they'd have these knives and saws and everything.
We
and
cut off that leg really fast. Why is it still infected?
They'd have like wooden handles and ivory handles and stuff, and they wouldn't wash them other than like as much as, and they'd be performing in these theaters, these operating theaters, where people would just come in off the street. And they like all be crowding around to watch, and like nobody was showering.
What
like,
the
nobody
hell?
Nobody was showering.
Oh my God, the smell in those places
Let me tell you about the smell.
Okay.
Hospitals constantly reeked of piss, shit, and vomit. A sickening odor permeated every surgical ward. And then what they would do, because what they thought disease was transmitted through was bad air. Okay. It was what's the word? Like malaria. That term comes from bad air.
Okay.
So they thought it was just somehow the bad air or something. So what they would do is they'd be sure to cover up all the wounds like with bandages and never let them see the air. So you'd have these nasty wounds.
Oh God.
Just without cleaning the wounds or anything like that. And then Lister's dad was a guy that created a lot of innovations with microscopes. So Lister would be playing around with his microscope, looking at all this stuff, and all these other surgeons were like, nerd, play with your microscope. We're over here chopping stuff up. And that's what
kids are
medical students
to
back
be the
then
fastest.
Had a bad reputation as being kind of just wild, these wild and crazy partying dudes.
Oh my God.
They were drunk all the time.
Great.
And surgeons, well, because surgeons, here's another, this was another part of it. I wrote it down. Basically, medical students themselves had a really high mortality rate because they were working in these hospitals.
Yeah.
And if you cut your finger or something, you're like, that was it for you. You're like, you cut your finger while you're working on somebody that's already got an infected wound or something.
Yeah,
and then you're going to work on all these other people. Yeah. And then
then you're spreading it to everybody.
Yeah. It was
I wonder how the plague happened.
It was just absolutely awful. So there's a link to it on the website, deceptivelyfast.com. Check it out. It's the butchering art.
All right.
That is, it's frankly, it's a hard read because I'm squeamish by nature.
Okay.
And I get squeamish a lot in here. There's a whole lot of talking about, here's the other thing that came up that I thought was interesting. Between 1800 and 1850, there were more than 200 recorded cases of wife sales in England. This is the state of being a woman
wife
in England
sales?
In the mid-1800s. Guys, a guy would be like, this just isn't doing it for me. I'm going to go ahead and sell my wife and children to somebody else.
God.
The highest taker. And then also,
did Lister buy some wives? Is that what happened?
No. This was like in one little aside.
Oh, okay.
He's working on this woman who is a battered wife. And it started off, they're talking about just how awful it was for women back then. Because a guy could divorce a woman. It wasn't all that easy, but there were a few things, like I think adultery, he could divorce her for adultery. A woman couldn't divorce her husband unless there was both adultery and battery.
Oh my God.
So it was like, she was just SOL. And like, so she couldn't prove, this one woman couldn't prove that he was cheating on her, but he's definitely beating her. But like, sorry about it.
Sorry.
You gotta be cheating on her. It's not horny enough. Yeah. So that's how that came up. But it's this really, really grim view of how everything actually was. And it's a fun read, but I have to fight through a few of the moments.
Don't read while eating dinner.
The other thing, okay. Do I want to tackle gun control on this podcast?
Maybe not today.
Do I want to fix it right now?
Nah, I mean, quick can you fix it?
I came across this article in 538.com, and I'm only going to make this one point about it, because sometimes it's like when I'm an onlooker on abortion arguments. You watch like abortion versus anti-abortion people, and or pro-choice versus pro-life, and you realize, like, wow, they're not even arguing about the same thing. Like,
right.
These guys aren't even arguing about the same thing. But I'm reading 538.com, which I think a lot of people would think of as, like, kind of a left-leaning website.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's
sure.
fair or not, but, like, people view it as a left-leaning website. But this one writer in here is making this point that, you know, talking about school shootings might not be the best way to talk about gun control and what happens with guns. And I didn't like the way the guy was framing it, because this guy came at it from the approach of, all right, if you want to limit gun violence, you have to look at who gets killed the most from guns. And I think it was a third of the people, or the majority of the people, the biggest number of people killed by guns are self-inflicted gun wounds from suicide.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then there are other things, you know, obviously, that like the total number of people that die in a mass school shooting is relatively small compared to all these other things.
Yeah.
And he was making a point about that. But I think the issue, though, and the problem there is that those other types of killings don't have the terroristic effect Like where it strikes fear into the heart of somebody who could be leading a perfectly normal life and their kid's just going to school and being a good kid, and then all of a sudden they're subjected to this.
It's totally, I think the big part is you're sending your kids off to this place that they're supposed to be safe.
Yeah.
And this thing is happening. And it keeps happening.
Right. And then that's where, so some of the, whether you're arguing for or against gun control, I think I like to start on these things and figure out, okay, where can everybody agree? And at the very least, I think people can agree that if you can't agree on anything else, we'd love to keep the guns out of the hands of these people that are that are eventually going to shoot a school up. So how do you get to that point? And I think I've actually... Maybe I'm idiotically optimistic about that. I feel like I've started to at least see a little bit of that, where you get people from the NRA, you get people from the complete anti-ban all guns side, and you know, it's always tricky in a free society how you identify people who might be committing crimes. But at the very least, like, that's some common ground there.
Yeah,
and that's as far as I'll go with that.
Yeah, I think you're right though. I think that's the right place to start. Yeah. I think that it needs to start, and I think the issue is bigger than just one issue. There's not one answer.
Oh, dude,
not one answer. And I've tried to stay off Facebook all weekend because it's been terrible.
Well, you know what's interesting? Because I come from, like, I grew up in a pretty rural area, and I have a lot of families, a lot of people in my family hunt a lot. Like, they're big time hunters. But it is interesting to see the difference between, I think, some people who grew up in urban areas who have this vision of gun owners, which is like just a bunch of Yosemite Sands, like, boom, we're gonna, I'm gonna shoot as many people as I want, whenever I want. And it just certainly doesn't jibe with the vast majority of people I know who own guns. And then I think likewise on the other side of it, you have my family. You look at most, urban hippies is just a complete bunch of moronic whatever. And again, it goes back to everything is amplified and exacerbated by social media, because you do see the worst version of every person on television. Like, you watch cable news and you see the worst gun owner, and you also see the worst
hippie,
like,
crazy.
Just non-empathetic, sympathetic, whatever it is, liberal that's come, that thinks that anybody from Texas is might as well be a war criminal, So that part of it's frustrating. But however we get to actually having a conversation. All right, I've gone. You know what? I said I was going to do a half hour here. All I want to do is get this thing on SoundCloud so I can submit it to iTunes.
And put a picture of your cat up.
And I've got a picture of me and one of my three cats.
What is the cat's name?
I'd like to be a zero cat family. We have three cats, and it's the Deceptively Fed podcast, Deceptively Fast podcast. Check it out. Eventually, it'll be up on iTunes. When it does go there, don't give me a review yet. Wait until we get all the kinks ironed out on this thing. Garrett, I appreciate you helping me actually get logged into the computer.
No problem.
For your input as well. And take it easy, everybody. I have no, what do you call it at the end there, a tagline?
We don't have an out cue.
Hey, I have no out cue yet. So we'll work on that. Suggestions are appreciated. DeceptivelyFast.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.